I'm talking today with Dr. Greg Moore, who's the head of inflammatory bowel disease at Monash Health. Thanks for your time, Greg.
Thanks very much.
You've written a pretty detailed piece for next Monday's MJA on biosimilars and some of the issues for inflammatory bowel disease in that area. Tell us a little bit about what biologic medications are.
Well, biologic medications are very different from traditional medications we've had, where they were predominantly small molecules, things such as aspirin-like, small number of chemicals, and very easily replicatable. Biologic medications are usually monoclonal antibodies created in biological systems, so highly complex and highly specific and being incredibly effective for a lot of diseases, particularly inflammatory diseases, cancer and so forth. So they've been a revolution in terms of how we can actually treat our diseases.
So these days it's more about actually treating damaged tissue rather than keeping symptoms in check, really.
Yeah, it's actually allowed us to sort of change our management paradigm to the point that we can actually achieve healing of the bowel and prevent that accumulated damage and minimise the need for corticosteroids and drugs like that with accumulated toxicity. So they've really changed the game for us.
So they're complicated medications. Does that make them complicated and expensive to make?
Very much so.
Yeah.
So it really requires culture systems, lots of processing, and we're talking costs of drugs in the tens of thousands per annum. So they're very expensive drugs, but the health economics of these drugs work out and they do achieve such benefits that they're very useful, but incredibly expensive. And as patients go on to these drugs and achieve response, they tend to stay on the drugs, ever increasing cost burden for our health budget.
Are they PBS sponsored?
Most indications are PBS. There are obviously conditions that fall through the cracks where there isn't the clinical trial data, but yes, largely PBS. And they make up a significant number of the sort of top 20 most expensive drugs in cost for the PBS.
So it makes sense that as these drugs come off patent, biosimilars are being made.
Yeah.
Obviously, there are advantages to that because it's cheaper. And what are the worries about biosimilars?
Probably just to define a biosimilar, because these molecules are so complex, it's almost impossible to make an exact duplicate copy. So they're called generics. And I think that's important to note. So unlike, say, an antihypertensive medication, thing like that, or, for instance, a statin, you can't make an exact copy. But these drugs are rigorously assessed, and there's a global push to make sure that they are as close as possible, virtually identical, but they're not completely identical, and it's very hard to actually make them identical. Because of the processes in making them, they're still not enormously cheaper. They are somewhat cheaper, and that's, given the volumes and the cost, it's still very important for us to have those cost savings.
In terms of the indications biosimilars are used for, if it's good for one indication of the originator, it's good for all of them.
Yeah.
Is that a good system?
Clinicians are sort of happy with that because these drugs have been assessed rigorously in a couple of conditions and they're as close as we can. I think we don't have particular problems with what they call extrapolation of indication. So infliximab, which is the first biosimilar we're dealing with in the inflammatory sphere, has been demonstrated in randomized clinical control trials in a number of things like ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, rheumatoid arthritis, psoriasis, and so forth. It was only studied, though, the biosimilar in rheumatoid arthritis and ankylosing spondylitis, and efficacy was found to be equivalent. And I think as clinicians, we're happy with that because the drug is made as close as possible to be similar, seems to work, and the initial data we have in the real world would support that it seems to be, the efficacy is equivalent.
Safety?
Safety is an interesting question, and obviously we already have issues with the patients generating antibodies against biological medications. These are large foreign proteins. It's been an issue, and we have a significant percentage of patients will lose response, and up to 50% of patients may need dose intensification or will get reactions and need to switch. So obviously when you have a new drug which is almost identical but not quite, there is theoretical concern that that may be more likely to generate antibodies.
Right.
There's been some studies now done showing that if you have antibodies to the originator compound, those antibodies cross-react against the biosimilar.
Okay.
And that's very reassuring for us to say that they look very, very similar, even if your immune system can't tell the difference. There's been some studies done now looking at a single switch where patients been on the originator drug, then put on the biosimilar. Doesn't appear to be any particular problems in immunogenicity or loss of response. What we're concerned is multiple switching back and forth, which has not been prospectively studied. There's been no rigorous pharmacovigilance to look at that particular situation, which may arise due to some decisions in this country.
To put that in practical terms, if a patient goes into a pharmacist and says, I need this, and they say, oh, we haven't got any of that, but we can give you this, same stuff. Does that mean that patients are, in theory, getting a different prescription every time they...
Potentially. It's controlled as much as within limits, but it's a complex drug, and we don't have that long-term safety data, and we know these patients are going to be on these drugs for a long time. This is a different situation from some other biologics, say, for instance, colony-stimulating factors, where it's probably only a short period of time a patient's going to be on that medication, you know, for marrow support or so forth in chemotherapy. We're talking potentially decades patients going to be on these drugs. And as a clinician and from the patient representative bodies, that really is some concern that the safety of the long-term evidence of switching back and forth. But the health economics are clearly there and support it.
So do we need a vigilance program about multi-switching and aflagging?
Oh, we certainly do. And the current systems we have are not very dynamic and quite retrospective. Voluntary reporting, for instance, to the TGA.
Of adverse events,
which, and there's not very high rates of actually reporting. Busy clinicians are busy doing other things rather than, you know, filling in more forms. So we don't have any real-time way of tracking patients switching at the time and having adverse events. There are ongoing discussions, and the government has formed a working group on this, but currently we do not have that.
Is it something the pharmacists can help out with?
Oh, certainly pharmacists can help, and definitely in that situation. We're in a bit of an interesting situation with infliximab because it's very overwhelmingly hospital prescribed. So it's quite a controlled situation, but the same approach, and there's a decision made called aflagging, government's made, which the health minister makes a determination that the pharmacist can substitute a medication at the point of dispensing without necessarily talking to the prescriber. And that's the point of contention, I think, with the peak bodies, that it's such a complex drug, such complex pharmacology, physiology and immunology about this, that it's really a discussion that should be best had between the patient and the prescribing doctor. As a prescribing doctor, if I tick brand substitution not permitted, that takes that out of the equation. But if that hasn't been done, there will be an issue. With the newer self-administered biologics also reaching patent expiry, biosimilars coming in, that's going to be much more of an issue with community pharmacies dispensing the vast majority of those medications. We're not looking to create fear, and I think theoretically this is an unlikely event, but the absence of data to show that this is safe is not enough to go forth into the...
No data doesn't mean safe.
No. So that's our concern. And look, I suspect as time goes by we'll get much more experience, particularly from Europe. A lot of medication going on, but most of the changes have been single switch, not switch back, switch back, switch back. So we as the patient sort of representatives and peak medical groups sort of... think that it's really about education of the prescriber and also of the patient to really take that into account. And as it stands, there is cost savings just from the introduction of a biosimilar, mandated cost savings, which is fantastic. Beyond that, the savings are actually not appreciable in the next few years. There will be further savings as everyone's PBS reimbursement goes down as the competition's assessed in the market. But it's not just by introducing aflagging there's necessarily a cost saving. Just introducing a biosimilar actually achieves those cost savings. So we think it was an unnecessary step, but it's not something that's looking like it's going to be reversed. I think it's just about having that sort of discussion with the patients and being aware of the issues. And it's not an enormous safety concern that we have. It's just that absence of safety and the need for ongoing pharmacovigilance. And hopefully, you know, we'll have this discussion in 5 years' time and we'll be very reassured that it was never an issue in the first place.
Terrific. Thank you for your time.
Pleasure.